We live in a time where certain conversations can seem tense or even taboo. So to push back against this culture of silence, I sit down every other week with a different guest to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters. My name is Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold. Welcome back, everybody. On this episode of The Threshold, we are kicking off a new concept here. We're going to do a two-part series. This episode and the next one are going to be talking about the intersection between faith and feminism, or belief in feminism a little bit more precisely. I live up in Seattle, Washington, and gender roles, gender theory, modern feminism, intersectional feminism, these are conversations that kind of surround me on a day-to-day basis. And so as somebody who doesn't know what it's like to be a woman, because I'm not, it's something that I'm always kind of curious about, how being a man or a woman impacts the way that people approach faith and their life in general. So I was super excited to sit down and do a couple of episodes where I talked to people who were secular feminists about what they believe. And I'm really excited to share with you our interview guest today. But also for these two episodes, I wanted to invite in a special guest co-host, which I've never done before. We've never done a series before. I've never had an extended guest co-host, even though we've worked in some new co-hosts alongside Father Colin Parrish. And so I'm excited to introduce you guys to Claire Swinarski. Claire, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here. How are you doing?
I am doing great. The reason I asked Claire on is not just because her podcast is so much more famous than mine, but also because Claire has a podcast, if you're not familiar with it, called the Catholic Feminist Podcast. And because I'm Catholic and I love for us to explore things in kind of a consistent Catholic understanding, even though we're talking about what different people believe and think, I thought there'd be no person better than Claire to come on and share with us and have this conversation and this journey with us, because she's going to know more about all these things than I am. And so, Claire, can you tell people just a little bit about who you are and your show?
Sure. First of all, I do not have a famous podcast. I did, like, the thought of being Catholic famous makes me want to vomit everywhere. So just don't think of me like that. But yeah, my name is Claire and I live outside Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I live with my very Polish, very nerdy husband and our toddler, and I'm super pregnant right now. Hopefully by the time, I don't know when this is coming out, but hopefully by the time this comes out, I have two kids.
Yeah.
And I spend my days as a freelance writer, so I help businesses craft their web content, but I also run the Catholic Feminist Podcast, so I get to interview some amazing women about their role in the church and in the world at large. So that's kind of how I spend my days.
So Claire, I want people to get to know you a little bit better over these two episodes also. So I'm going to kind of switch things up from a normal interview I do, because you're my co-host, not an interviewee. But if you had to tell people kind of what you believe about life and faith really quickly, what do you think about everything really quickly?
What do I think about everything in the world? I think that we were all created by God. I think that we were all created for God. And by that, I mean, we are created by love for love. So I think that our purpose in the world is to serve God and to bring other people closer to Him. And I think we were all created by Him, whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not. I think that's kind of how we came to be. And I know that for me, that faith is the center of my life and it directs everything else. So it definitely has an impact on how I live, eat, breathe, talk, etc.
Awesome. And I want to ask you a couple questions that kind of connect with our first guest. But first, have you ever heard of New Wave feminists? Are you familiar with them?
I am a little familiar with them. I wouldn't say super, but I had absolutely heard of them, especially when the Women's March took place right after Trump got elected. That was like my first interaction with them when I heard about how all that went down. Basically, like, they got uninvited. That was when I had first heard of them, but then I liked them on Facebook. And so I've been kind of following some of their stuff. So I was familiar with their thoughts, but I wouldn't say I was super familiar with like their actual action items.
Yeah, because they're based out of Dallas and because at some point somebody on their staff wrote an article about how amazing Little Flower lip balm, which my company Catholic Balm Co. Makes. I was a little bit more aware, but I've been following Destiny, who's going to be our guest today, for a little while, just through that and through some other things. And then, like I said, you guys will hear this in the interview. We actually went to high school together, but didn't know each other at all, which was kind of like mind blowing to me because we had a huge high school, but I went to the same school district for my entire school career. So I got to know more and more people as time went on. And I was definitely a social butterfly and moved around a lot. So I knew most people I went to high school with at least by name or by sight. And so it was really surprising to me that we had never met. But the work that she's doing, especially in kind of the secular feminist world, is absolutely amazing for like just in the fact that it's pro-life. And that's not a very common perspective on that. But I want to ask you a couple of things that she had talked about that I'm just curious if they resonate with you at all. Have you ever eaten mustard and ketchup mixed in with your pork and beans?
No. Although I have to admit, I don't even know how many times I've eaten pork and beans in my life. I could probably count it on one hand. So it's not like it's like a regular meal that I encounter.
All right. And then I would love to hear from you. Who is your favorite person?
Like in the world?
Yeah.
That's a big question. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe my toddler. Is that weird?
No, what's awesome about your toddler?
He is just the most fun person to be around. And I love to see how he gets so excited about things. I think something I struggle with is just being really cynical and being like over it. Like I'll see a cute dog and it's like, oh, whatever. There's cute dogs everywhere. But my son, every time he sees a cute dog, it's like he's never seen a dog before. He loses his mind. And I just love the excitement that he has just makes me happy to be alive. And so I just love being around him. He just makes me super happy. Even though, I mean, he's two, so he's not super fun all the time. But he's definitely like my favorite person to be around.
And then if you had to describe yourself in high school in just a couple words, how would you do that?
The worst human ever. Super annoying, super insecure, just the most insecure person you've ever met who way overcompensated and was terrible. Right. I like, oh gosh, I think of high school and I like shudder.
Oh, that's awesome. I think anybody who ever needs to be humbled should just look back on themselves at high school. And whether that was the best version of yourself, I think that can be humbling, but you're not. And I think it's always good to remember, like, we were all in high school, or for some of us, like, we were all in middle school at some point in time. And I think that's huge. So so those are all things that I get into with Destiny during our conversation, that and a whole lot more. And so I'm really excited to share with you guys my conversation with Destiny Herden De La Rosa. Hi, Destiny. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. How are things in Dallas, Texas today?
A little bit rainy, but overall pretty beautiful. As always. I mean, Texas is amazing. I don't know if you know this, but it's amazing here. So
I do know that Texas is amazing. You know, I married somebody who's not from the great state of Texas. My wife, she's from Pittsburgh, and she firmly disagrees that Texas is beautiful. It took me a long time to understand why that was the case. And it just has to do with geography. She comes from Pittsburgh, having lived in Seattle now for 7 years. When I go home, which I'm going to be doing in a few weeks, the lack of geography, like the fact that everything's flat, kind of bothers the human eye. Like when you're used to that kind of thing. But man, the big sky in Texas, the sunlight, oh man, like I love it. And I miss the heat and the warmth.
Yes. And I'm glad you explained that to me, because I thought I was going to have to fight your wife for a minute, which felt really like that's not a good way to start a feminist podcast in any way, is offering to fight your wife because she doesn't like Texas. But I do understand that. It is very flat here for sure.
Yeah. So I want to ask you just a couple of questions to help people get to know you a little bit better, know a little bit about who you are, how you think. Some of them may be silly. Some of them are a little bit more serious. But one of my favorite ones to start with is, what is the best meal you've ever had? Who did you eat it with and where were you at?
Holy moly. That's a great question. And you know what? Like, of course, the thing that comes to mind is this thing that my mom makes. It's so, I don't even, okay. So basically it's macaroni and cheese and beans, like pork and beans. And she puts ketchup and mustard in the pork and beans. And when I first explained this to my husband, he's like, that is disgusting. Like, I don't know what type of trailer park that came out of, but that's unacceptable. And then I made it for him and he's like, okay, I get it now. And so now I do this thing where I actually make this very hillbilly like lunch for people all the time. And everyone agrees that it's super delicious after making fun of me, of course, which I understand. I totally get it. I don't know why that's the first thing that popped into my mind. I should have been like, oh, ribeye steak with David Sedaris or something, but I actually haven't had that meal.
I was going to say, have you had ribeye steak with David Sedaris?
Cause I would have. No, oh my gosh. Wouldn't you be so jealous if that was true?
I would have 100%. My wife would have wanted to fight you then because she loves David Sedaris and would be jealous. That's awesome. Well, let's go with that. What's your favorite David Sedaris book or story?
Oh my gosh. Okay. My favorite story is one called Big Boy. Wow. This is a way to start off a podcast. So it's about an Easter weekend where he goes to a friend's house and he excuses himself from the table to go to the bathroom and he walks in the bathroom and there's a huge turd in the toilet and he cannot get it to flush. And so he spends 5 minutes agonizing about how to flush this because then he has this other, conundrum that if he walks out of the bathroom and leaves it, everyone will think it was his since he announced to the whole table that he was about to go to the bathroom. And it's the most hilarious story. It makes me laugh so hard. I'm just like shaking and crying. And I get to this point where I'm like, am I actually having a breakdown or am I still laughing? Because like I'm crying that hard. So I actually did get to meet David Sedaris. He spoke here in Dallas and I had him sign a copy of, I actually opened it to the Big Boy story. And had him sign it. And he does this thing because he doesn't like all the weird small talk that people offer up to him, where he will just ask a random question. It's different at different speaking engagements. And so he said, his question was, what is your favorite animal? And I'm a people person. I'm not really actually much of an animal person. And so just like with the macaroni and cheese and beans answer that I gave you, I picked the most bizarre thing I could think. And I said a snake, which like who likes snakes? That's nobody likes snakes. So he draws this giant snake on the first page of Big Boy. And it actually is kind of perfect since it's a whole story about poop. And then he has this big coiled up. It worked out well.
The random question when he was here in Seattle last, because we've seen him a couple times, was his statement on the stage was men either grow beards or own guns, and they grow beards if their dad owns guns. And so I've got this big, big honking beard. And so he was like, do you own guns? I said, yeah, but they live with my dad in Texas who owns more guns than normal. I said, so I totally still fall into your stereotype. And so wife got an emu and me talk pretty one day is her favorite one. His Easter stories, appropriately to this, his Easter stories are the best. It doesn't matter whether they're about religiosity or not. I love any story involving Easter or anything else like that that he has. Those are some of my favorite ones. We actually read 6 to 8 black men, his story about talking about Christmas in other countries every St. Nicholas Day here in our household. That's an annual St. Nicholas Day.
That is an amazing tradition. So, I might have to adopt that.
Awesome. So my next question is, let's talk about that a little bit. You said you were a people person. Who's your favorite person?
Oh my gosh. Well, so I made a couple people. I feel like I'm obligated to pick them just because they're great. And I'm just cloning them into little amazing humans. And you're tricking me right now because I almost just said one of my daughters as if she was my favorite. She's the most like me. She's the one that I'm cloning the best. Her name's Eddie. She's 9 years old. She loves Saturday Night Live and is going back and watching all the archived versions. And so we just have a very similar sense of humor. She's also obsessed with Queen and knows like the entire catalog and acts them out. And she makes me laugh constantly. But I actually have 4 kids. Each of them are totally unique and weird in their own way. And they're just they're the best. Like making people who are just awesome is so much fun. Cause then you just have your own like little club everywhere you go.
Yeah, no, we have four also. And I totally know that. It's really funny. As a youth minister and as a father, people will often say like, who's your favorite or whatever. And I'm always like, I mean, I have favorites, I'm not going to lie, but that doesn't mean I love them or care about any one of them more than the other. I care about my own children.
My theory is that you're allowed to have a favorite as right. long as you rotate them out. As long as like everybody gets a turn, somebody can be your favorite this week. I always tell them my favorite is the one who most recently cleaned the toilets for me or like did something that I don't want to do. Like you get to be the favorite for the day now.
Oh, that's awesome. So now, surprisingly, we did figure out we went to high school together. And I was surprised by that for a couple of reasons. One, I don't think we knew who each other were. And I knew a lot of people and it's not because I was super popular, but I am a very tall guy who very much stood out because I wore really weird things in high school. And so it's very rare that I meet somebody I went to high school with who I don't know and they don't know me really well at all. So can you tell me a little bit about what you were like in high school? Like if you had to describe yourself in one or two words, what would that be?
Yeah, so pregnant. I was like that in high school. I actually got pregnant sophomore year. And that's kind of why I decided in my head, maybe I don't remember you, because that was just like this very, for lack of a better term, like traumatic experience. It took a lot of mental power for me to kind of truck through that. And actually, I went to my 10-year high school reunion a few years back. And there was a guy there who came up and knew my name, remembered me. I didn't remember him at all. And he said, I remember the day that you came back after finding out you were pregnant and we were in like some metal fab class together. And he's like, you just broke down and started telling me all your fears and all this stuff and what you were so afraid of for this child and for the future and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I've never forgotten that. And here I am. I barely remember the guy's name. So that's just my own mind fog in general. Probably too much red wine or something. Like it's not that we probably actually did meet, but that's literally the level of, I remember three people from high school. And it's only because they're on my Facebook now. So other than that, in high school, I don't know. I think I tried to be kind of punk rock, hung out with like the skater type people. I was just dabbling in my activism back in high school. So I remember one of my earliest memories is when I did come back from summer vacation to my junior year. And now I had like the actual belly, you know, and I was 5 or 6 months pregnant. And I remember the first day walking in and this girl walked up to me and she said, yeah, I was pregnant over the summer too. And I look down and she doesn't have the belly. And so I'm kind of confused and it takes me a second. And then I say, oh, so you killed your child? And she cusses me out and storms off, like rightfully so. And I went home that night and I told my mom, because my mom's the one who ingrained these like pro-life ideals in me. She actually got pregnant with me at 19 at the University of Texas. And so it's one of those things I always say, like, I knew better than anybody how hard that childhood was. And so the fact that I repeated this cycle, I had a lot of kind of like, you know, inward anger at myself for that. But I also really, really empathized with the unborn child. Like, I think in my head, I was kind of like going to be a baby saver type activist, because I knew how easy it would have been for my mom to have an abortion with me. So anyway, when I went home and I told my mom this story, I thought she was going to be very proud of me. And instead, she looked at me and said, so she'll have her next abortion in your honor. You understand that, right? You're no longer a safe person. You're not someone she could ever talk to. And it was just this punch in the gut of conviction and truth. And oh my gosh, you're right. Like, I know what she's going through. I know how scary it is. Once that second line showed up, like, I vividly remember the feeling of wanting to rip my stomach off of my body and run away from it. Like, I was terrified. And so I think that's kind of when I switched, not switched over completely, but it became focused, my pro-life feminist activism became focused on the woman as much as the unborn child, because now I realized I was both of those. And so the next day when I went back to school, in the hilarious way the universe works, another girl comes up to me, and this one, she was very frightening. Like, even the principals and the teachers were afraid of her. She was kind of like the class bully. And she walks up to me. I'm sitting in the cafeteria at this long lunch table by myself, and I'm like reading What to Expect When You're Expecting. And she says, "I was pregnant over the summer too." And I'm like, "You've got to be kidding me." Like, I mean, I know how not to do it, but I hadn't come up with another way of how to do it yet. And so I look down again, no belly. And I said, "How far along were you?" And she goes, "I don't know, like 12 weeks or something." And I say, 12 weeks, because here I am getting all these baby center updates. You know, your baby's the size of a kumquat this week. And I just blurt out some fact, which I don't even remember what it was now. It was like, "Oh, fingernails and toenails," or something like that. And she slams her hands on the table and she's like, "F you. If I wanted to know that, I would have asked." And she storms off. So I'm like, okay, I'm two for two. Clearly, this should be my calling in life. But I realized in that moment that the huge difference between these two interactions, the very first one was just shame, judgment, and condemnation, right? That's all it was. It was me judging this woman. In the second scenario, it was me giving her information that honestly I feel like any abortion-minded woman should have before she ever walks through the doors of a clinic. Right. Like, it's basic fetal development information. It's knowledge about what that unborn child is, right? And so that's when I really became an advocate for, you know, education. And women need to be fully aware of what these choices entail. And, you know, so that they can, even if they still end up making that choice, at the end of the day, it won't be because of, you know, ignorance or because they were sold a bill of goods or because they were lied to or coerced. They need to obviously know the decision they're making. And so I feel like that moment in my high school career is something that really solidified me as an activist, as a feminist, as someone with, you know, pro-life convictions, kind of all in one. And then I've spent the last, I don't know, how long has it been since then? 18 years trying to perfect it so that I actually do have the right answer when talking to post-abortive women now.
Man, I want to come back to so much of that in just a little bit. What I do want to ask you, and we talked about this a little bit before the podcast started, and I want to ask you the kind of the core question that we ask here on The Threshold, and that's, if somebody came up to you on the street and asked you just to, in a few minutes, share with them what you believe about life and faith, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that I have no clue. And at the end of the day, none of us really have any clue. Like, we're all placing bets, right? And we all kind of like feel some desire to connect with something bigger than ourselves. I think there's a lot of security in that. You know, I don't want to think I'm in charge of the universe. And so I know something created us. Do I know what that something was? No. Can I find clues about what that something is everywhere? Absolutely. I was raised in a Protestant household, and my grandparents are ordained ministers. So I definitely had a lot of the Bible kind of poured into me at a young age, but there was also a lot of tradition and doctrine poured into me. And I think now at 34, I'm kind of having to look further and say, okay, if there is a creator of the universe, like, what is he to me? You know, I was telling someone recently that it's one thing when you're playing fast and loose with your own soul. It's another thing when you have four other human beings who are looking to you for truth, and you find yourself spouting something off just because it's what you were taught as a child. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, but science or but the logic, maybe that doesn't really go into what I think. And you really start questioning a lot of kind of just dogma and just stuff that was kind of put on you. And so at this point, it's funny because the older I get, the more I realize I don't know anything. And the more comfortable I actually am in saying I don't know anything. And that's okay. You know, whoever created me didn't download me like Matrix style with all the answers to the universe. And that's all right. And so I love, you know, talking to people of different faiths and understanding them. And kind of one of the core things that I've found through most political ideologies and religious beliefs is this kind of golden rule concept that, you know, be good to other people. And that has definitely informed who I am in this state of agnosticism, and also as an activist, as someone who believes in human rights. You know, I follow something called the consistent life ethic, which somebody told me was actually kind of derived from a bishop somewhere back in the Catholic Church at one point, which I didn't realize at all when I first started kind of following this belief. But basically, it's a very general belief that human beings should be free from violence for the duration of their life. And so that is what I adhere to now. Mm-hmm. That's probably the closest thing I have to any type of religious faith at this point.
No, I think that's really beautiful. So tell me a little bit more about that. Obviously, now you mentioned earlier that's where your activism started. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about kind of what you do in the world?
Right. So I have a group called New Wave Feminist, and we're a pro-life feminist group, which, of course, a lot of people scoff at initially, thinking that that's an oxymoron. But really, it's a very consistent and logical thought process that for most of history, women were treated as property. And so now that we've gained some rights and liberation, how would it be acceptable for us to then treat the unborn human as property? You know, if we look at patriarchal constructs of the past, they were very much about might makes right, because I'm bigger and stronger than you and you're powerless and statusless and voiceless. I can treat you however I please. And we see a lot of that mirrored in today's abortion activism, right? Because women are the ones with all of the control, we are able to do whatever we want to the unborn person. And in my opinion, that's very, you know, kind of patriarchal. And so because I am a feminist, and just as much as I'm a feminist, I'm pro-life. And just as much as that, I believe in the consistent life ethic. Like, this is kind of my core belief, is that I look at everything through the lens of human dignity. And so whether that's in the pro-life spectrum or in the feminist spectrum and my activism there, everything kind of comes through this lens of, just because we can do something, should we do it? Is it actually good for women and, you know, children and families and communities as a whole? That's what we should constantly be striving towards. And that's kind of at the core of the message of my group, New Wave Feminist.
Now, talk to me a little bit more about kind of how that, you mentioned some of your experiences in high school already, but tell me a little bit about the path of that understanding within you, right? So did you feel like this is something that was presented to you from a young age, this kind of understanding of what it means to value, you know, a consistent life ethic, or really even the understanding of what it means to be a feminist? Was that modeled for you as a child by your mom, by your grandma, by anybody in your life?
Absolutely. So, I mean, my mom, you know, watching her work two jobs, finish her college degree, all of this while raising me, like, she is a feminist. Whether or not she ever even, you know, used that label to describe what she was doing, she just got shit done. Like, that's just what she did. And so I think being raised by a strong, opinionated, powerful woman like that absolutely made me a feminist. And I also remember growing up with the, I think it was a Time magazine on our coffee table that had all of the in utero photos of fetal development. So I was never, kind of the pro-life beliefs ingrained in me were never from a religious perspective. It was always very scientific. So I would say that they kind of matured together, my feminism and my pro-life beliefs, just that it is our job to always stand up for the weak and vulnerable and the oppressed. And so I would say that probably at some point in my 20s, that's when I started realizing that feminism had become synonymous with abortion rights. And I had to make a choice. Like, do I either compromise this issue, which I see a lot of people do, you know, they'll say, well, I personally could never have an abortion, but I don't feel like I can tell other people what to do. But if we applied that to any other human rights violation of our time, it wouldn't make any sense. Like, I personally couldn't own a slave, but who am I to tell you what to do with someone else's body? And so for me, it just became very cut and dry that, you know, there's not really a space for pro-life feminists. There are great groups like Feminists for Life who have been around since pre-Roe, but really kind of the young, you know, 20-something feminist, I wasn't seeing this message presented a lot. So we have a saying around here that you have to Gandhi that shit. And it's just a matter of, you know, be the change that you want to see. If there's not a space for your belief, then make that space. But I think that for a lot of millennials, especially, we've been told that you have to fit into this two-party system, or you have to fit into this, you know, one particular religious belief. And I think that's why you're seeing so many millennials right now kind of rebel against institutions in general. They're not participating in particular religions. They're not participating in particular political parties. And I think that's actually really healthy. I think, you know, growing up in Texas, especially, sorry about that, a virus thing came up. Growing up in Texas, especially, you're kind of told that if you're pro-life, you have to vote Republican. And so for a very long time, it just became a thing about chronological human rights. I didn't agree with a lot of stuff in the Republican Party, but, you know, the pro-life thing is always going to get me to vote a particular way. And then finally, one day I realized, like, I don't want to have to compromise the rest of my consistent life ethic beliefs. I'm anti-war. I'm anti-death penalty. You know, I'm pro-refugee. I believe in taking care of other people. And so for me, I kind of always leaned a little bit libertarian, but I finally made the jump and decided, like, I'm going to be an independent. And if that means that I no longer have a club I belong to and I lose my power and my voice, then it's okay, because I would rather my voice be authentic than be something that was compromised. And so when I actually finally came out and was like, that's it, I'm leaving all political parties, I found it really liberating, because then I could see them for what they were. And I could call out, you know, BS that I saw on both sides that were very contradictory to what they claimed to believe. And again, that lack of consistency, whether it was in a religious spectrum or a political spectrum, became something that I wanted to work to change rather than staying silent on and compromising my beliefs for.
So if you, if somebody asked you kind of to define feminism, because I know that's a term that different people use different ways in society today, how would you do that?
It's really simple. I mean, at the core of it, you're believing that women deserve equal rights and opportunities. And so I always think it's funny whenever a celebrity will come out as anti-feminist, then you see the feminist side kind of jump on her and say, how dare you be anti-feminist? Don't you realize that you're only where you're at because of the opportunities that feminism has given you? And the funny thing is, they'll always come back to what I just said. Feminism is strictly about equal rights for men and women, and making sure that women have those rights and opportunities. But at the same time, as soon as you interject a belief that isn't kind of as progressive, right? Like, in my opinion, the pro-life stance, then suddenly you're told you're not a feminist. So clearly, to many radical feminists nowadays, there is this very kind of stringent belief system that you have to stick with in order to identify as a feminist. But I always say, luckily for me, like, I don't really give a fuck, which I think is why I'm a feminist in the first place. I don't need permission to believe what I'm believing and do what I'm doing. Like, to me, feminism is a movement that was born out of rebellion, and it should constantly be challenging itself from within side. And so why are we not challenging a status quo of mainstream feminism? I would say right now it's kind of weird how easy it is to be a feminist. You know, we saw the Women's March in Washington, which I participated in. It was one of the largest marches I've ever seen. But there were so many women who, you know, put on their pink pussy hats and carried their Planned Parenthood signs and just did their things. But at the end of the day, I really don't know how many of them are actively feminist, or we're just feminist because it's kind of what you do in a Me Too era, right? And so I think we need to constantly be challenging, especially with the rise of intersectional feminism, and saying we're making spaces for all types of voices. That is the beauty of intersectional feminism. You know, let's talk to women of color and hear their experiences, hear what's challenging them. Let's talk to, you know, immigrant women, refugees, people who have completely different life experiences than us, and say, tell us your story. We have to get away from trying to tell other people what our version of feminism is and share our own stories, which again, you know, because of my mom's teen pregnancy and my own teen pregnancy, that drastically affected what feminism is to me. Now, if you just look at me for my label, oh, she's pro-life. There's a lot of things we associate with that. I always joke that if you did like a man on a street thing and ask somebody what pro-life means to them, they'll be like, oh, they bomb clinics and shoot doctors and have bullhorns and gory images like on giant signs. Like that's what it is to most people. But obviously that's not what it is to me. I realized that the only reason I was able to choose life for my son is because I had a support system that wasn't going to kick me out. It's because I had health insurance, so I didn't have to worry about the financial burden of labor and delivery. It's because I knew the resources in my area for after he was born so that I could give him a decent life. And, you know, I always think back to that first exchange with the girl that I judged so harshly. And one of the things my mom said to me is like, you have no idea what she's up against. Maybe her parents were going to kick her out. Maybe her parents are the ones who drove her to that abortion clinic. Like, I have no idea what other people's support systems are. So all I can do is learn from my own experience and say, this is what helped me. This is what truly gave me options and choices, was knowing that I had a family that was going to be there for me. Not everybody has that. So how can I implement that into my activism? How can I make sure that other women have the opportunities that I've had? And I think if we all start looking at our activism and our feminism from that angle, how can I make sure that other women have the opportunities I have? I think that would ultimately be the future of feminism. And I think, thankfully, that's what intersectionality is drawing us closer to.
No, I think that's amazing. I think it's such a huge challenge in today's world because, like I said before we started, it's so hard for people to actually sit down and listen deeply to other people. And therefore, we either typically overstate and come across really aggressively in our conversations, or we understate and we just kind of shrink away into silence. So I 100% love the conversation that you're leading and the way that you are leading that conversation around this issue within that. This is always like the stupidest question. I feel like any white male or any male period can ask, person can ask period about feminism, but how do men be good feminists? Like how do men behave in a way that actually supports a consistent feminist ideal?
I think that a lot of it is listening to women, allowing space for their voices and for their experiences. You know, it's funny. I try so hard not to. I'm not a man-hating feminist. I love men. I have made two men with my own body, like big fan of men. So it's not that. But I've noticed that there are times where I'll be sitting in a circle, you know, talking to people at a party, and I probably know a little bit more about pro-life politics or feminism than maybe some of the guys in the circle, but a lot of times they'll cut me off and they'll try to talk over me. And so I've gotten to the point where I kind of will start trying to talk in a man voice, like jokingly, like, here, can you hear me now if I take it down a few octaves? Can you now hear my very informed, well-researched opinions? And of course, they always laugh. I always do it in good humor, but it's something where I've noticed that a lot of times men have gotten very used to being the dominant voices in most conversations. Mm-hmm. And so they're uncomfortable when they're not, and when they just have to listen. But I do think that that is probably one of the best ways for men to be feminists. Don't be silent at all. You know, I hate this movement to silence men by, you know, when you say something, we immediately scream that it's mansplaining or something. No, it's probably not. A lot of the times it's not. It is just y'all expressing your opinion, but make sure that those opinions are equally shared, you know, that when we do have a conversation, by the way, I love the fact that I've talked for 75% of this, and now I'm telling you how to let women talk more. But that's what I'm saying. Like, make sure that it's actual dialogue and that you're truly listening to what women are saying and not just thinking about the next thing that you want to say.
Mm-hmm. I think that's such a huge statement. I you know, you look at some of the different conversations that are floating around today from different thought leaders on any side of this issue. And that's something that resonates with me really deeply, regardless of what the issue is, the ability to actually just listen to the other person for what they are saying, and not to compose your response, not to win the argument, not to, you know, anything else, just to say, Well, there may be people who actually know about this, and maybe we should let people's experiences speak to this, and then we can have an actual conversation after people have shared their experiences, rather than just trying to have my perspective or my opinion, which ultimately is never going to be factual because it's an opinion, even if it is correct or true or in line with all those things, is never going to have the same weight as an actual fact kind of rule the day. So I love that. Thank you so much for kind of sharing that.
But it's hard to do. I mean, I'll acknowledge I have a hard time often where I'll be talking to, say, a woman of color or someone who's just had a completely different experience than me. And in my mind, I start thinking, oh, well, this is why. And this is what led to it. And this is, you know, I start constructing all of these reasons. And so I do the exact same thing. And I think that's given me a lot of empathy for men, you know, in the sense that it really is a matter of saying, let me just listen and understand. And this goes so far beyond feminism. It's just our actual dialogue in 2018 when there's all these talking heads. Everybody has an opinion. You know, I found it really interesting a couple years ago. I have a very diverse Facebook, right? So it's, you know, a lot of liberals, I have socialists, I have conservatives, I have libertarians, I have everything on my Facebook. And after one of the State of the Unions, I started noticing, like, it was about 5 minutes after it ended, these buzzwords and these sayings kept showing up among people who were in the same political party. And many of them were kind of in this echo chamber. And I realized it's because this 24-hour, you know, news of your choice, your flavor that you, so you're either watching MSNBC or CNN or Fox, whatever your flavor is, you listen to the talking heads, they tell you what to think, and then you disseminate that information on social media to your echo chamber. And not a lot of people have a Facebook as diverse as mine or social media as diverse. And so they're hearing a bunch of what they want to hear. And so the second that somebody breaches that barrier and comes in and says, well, I don't know, maybe we should think about police brutality because this does seem statistically kind of a little off, they're eaten alive. And it's not because anybody is wrong. It's because a lot of people don't know how to do dialogue anymore. They don't know how to have civil dialogue. They don't know how to use critical thinking skills without someone downloading the information that they're supposed to have and these talking points. And we end up living in a world that's nothing but rhetoric. So I always joke with college students when I speak on campuses that, you know, the abortion debate, we could literally build a Facebook algorithm. Like, you say this, my response is this, then you post this stat, and then I have this from Guttmacher. And then, I mean, it's like, it's laughable at this point because we've had the debates for so long, but we haven't had actual conversations. And I think the way that you break that barrier is through personal experiences, storytelling, you know, kind of what you're doing here, understanding why somebody believes and feels the way they do, because a lot of times it's going to be obviously formed by their own personal experiences.
There's two things I always offer people at the end of any conversation. I'm just so thankful to be able to sit down with people like you, hear from your perspective. And that's one, if they have a question for me, I'd love to answer it, but I'm not actually that interesting. So if you don't have one, that's okay. And the second one is if you're comfortable with it, I love to pray with you or for you. I didn't know. Do you have a question you'd like to ask me?
So my question would be, what is your favorite David Sedaris story?
Oh, what is my favorite David Sedaris story? My favorite David Sedaris story. I do love Me Talk Pretty, but I feel like that's probably not it. You know, the one, and I can't remember all the details of it now, but I think it's one of the first ones I ever read that made me feel deeply uncomfortable. And it's that's one of the things that resonates. Like, typically when I'm reading a David Sedaris story, like, I'm very comfortable with it. Like, it's funny, and it you know, Christmas on Ice was the first thing of his I ever read, which is just this hilarious memoir of him at you know, working as a Christmas elf at like Macy's or wherever in New York City. And it's all these great short stories. But the first thing that ever made me deeply uncomfortable was him talking about him going to the nudist resort for the first period of time and his own discomfort with, like, actually being in a nudist colony where he's kind of like walking around with his shirt off some of the time and never really entirely comfortable with the scenario. Just the deep level of discomfort that he experienced, that he communicated, always really resonates with me. And I don't know why, but that is like one of my favorite stories. And it's because it makes me feel something completely different than any other David Sedaris story does. And I think that's one of the things that I love about it is I think it's really easy to think of David as like, he's this really funny guy who's kind of, you know, pointing out some, you know, cultural like faux pas or ways people think, or it's just, he's just a funny storyteller, especially if you listen to him reading live. All those things are true. But his ability to take his own discomfort and his own hurt and his own, you know, issues and put that on display in a way that's totally humanly accessible, and then to let that resonate deeply into another person is something that I really love. And I feel like for me, that story is what made me really get that about him really deeply. So I don't remember the name of it right now off the top of my head. I want to say it's in Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim, I think is the book that it's in, but I don't remember the name of the story.
That was the first one that I ever read.
Yeah. So, excellent. Yeah. So, and then the other thing is, if you're comfortable with it, I'd love to pray for you. If not, that's totally okay though.
You know what? I've got witches who are casting spells on me. So sure, let's give them some stuff from the other side.
Are they casting positive spells or negative spells? We need to know.
Negative spells, according to the Facebook comments I get. Very negative spells. So yeah, let's cancel some of that out.
All right, we'll specifically pray on that. I'm totally good with that. All right, so I'm going to begin in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. God, I thank you for destiny. I thank you for also just the way that you bring life into this world. However people want to believe that you do that, whatever people want to think that you are, the questions and the doubts that we have about you, all the things that kind of coalesce into this great cloud of unknowing, God, I thank you for all those things. But I thank you for this time with Destiny, for her ability to share. And I just ask that you would watch over her, that you would bless her, and specifically for any attack that may be coming to her from supernatural demonic forces. I ask that you would protect her against those and her family, these beautiful people that she made, that she's cloning into the best possible humans that she could, and hopefully the best versions of themselves. I just ask your abundant blessing on them. That you would guard them, and that in all those places of unknowing that we encounter you or that we encounter any greater truth, that we would find a sense of peace and solace and ultimately joy. We ask all these things through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Thank you so much.
So I love letting people shamelessly plug their stuff. So people want to know more about you or New Wave Feminist. Where do they go on the internet for that?
So definitely, I guess I always feel like I should give like a PG-13 warning. So if you're under 13, maybe wait a few years. But then
if you're under 13, you should not be listening to this podcast either.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Because I swore a bunch, which is more of what you'll get on our Instagram and Facebook, but definitely check out New Wave Feminists, plural with the S on the end. Cause it's more than just me, and there's a great wealth of diversity of thoughts and ideas in civil dialogue. And hopefully you will find a space for yourself there.
Thank you guys so much. We'll be back in just 1 second for my conversation with Claire Swinarski. Hey, everybody, welcome back. I am so excited to have been able to sit down with Destiny. Before we follow up with my special guest host, Claire Swinarski, I wanted to take just a moment to let you guys know about how you can support The Threshold. And the number one way that you can support The Threshold really is just by sharing The Threshold with somebody you think would enjoy the conversations. You can do that on social media. You can hit us on Twitter, on Facebook, just sharing it, downloading it onto a thumb drive and handing it to somebody if you don't know how to use the internet is a great way to share the show. Also, very personal, very retro. But the other great thing you can do is rate or review us on iTunes. Every time you get a 5-star rating, it helps people discover the show. But any rating you have, any feedback you have is always welcomed. You can also go and buy something from Catholic Balm Co. That's Catholic Balm Co., who makes beard balm, lip balm, lotion bars, all inspired by the Catholic tradition, all absolutely phenomenal products, and a lot of them made with my own two hands. We actually just released a new set of products that are all natural bug balm to help keep the insects off you this summer. We also have a muscle rub that's absolutely phenomenal. I hurt my back earlier this week and I've been putting it on. It feels great. And we did a diaper cream as well that is cloth diaper friendly because a number of people have asked. But if you go and you buy beard balm, any of those products, lotion bars, lip balm, you can use the promo code KNOCKKNOCK to let us know you heard about it on The Threshold and also get a 10% discount on anything you purchase. The last way that you can support us on The Threshold is to become a patron on Patreon. That's
setting aside a little bit of money each month to get a little bit of extra content, but also to support us directly. That money comes here and it actually helps pay for editing and equipment and all the other things we need to do with hosting and everything else to make the podcast happen on a regular basis. And so we are incredibly thankful for people who do that. And you also get behind the scenes stuff, extra interviews, side interviews, other stuff like that. We do have some bonus content going up from this episode on there where I sit down and talk to Destiny about, from a completely secular perspective, why she is pro-life, what actually makes her do that, what's her rationale behind that. So if you'd like to hear that, consider becoming a patron. Just try it for a month, see if it's a good fit for you. We'd love to have you do that. But until we talk again, we're going to just dive back into my follow-up conversation with Claire Swinarski. Welcome back, everybody. So, Claire, what stood out at you from my conversation with Destiny?
So much. She's awesome. Quite a few things really popped out to me. One of them was especially when she was talking about how for so long in history, we've thought that might makes right. Like we've thought that the stronger person just gets to do whatever they want. And I'm talking like physically stronger person. And for so long, that was like men could treat women like property. And I really like how she spun that on its head and said, you know, now we treat these unborn children as property. And it's just, I've been thinking about that a lot lately because I think I read an interview the other day where someone was saying that they were pro-choice because you should get to decide the kind of life that you want to live. And all I could think about was like, well, what if you decide you want slaves? You don't get to decide that. You know what I mean? Like, what if you decide you want to murder somebody? Like you actually don't get to decide. You get to decide a lot, but not everything. And so when she said that, that kind of clicked in my head too, like that we do get decisions and we do get autonomy, but that there is a line where just because you can do something doesn't mean that it's the right thing to do or that you should be able to do it. And so I thought that was really cool. And then I just loved how she was talking about like that everyone wants millennials to fit into this two-party system. And we're all just like, no, we're not going to do it. It's stupid. And I'm a super cynical person about politics in general. I tend to be like, it's all bullshit. Burn it down. I hate it. But when she was saying that we don't need to fit into those boxes and that you can kind of be your own sort of political party, I really liked that a lot because I think that so many people, especially Catholics, like if we're talking about this through a specifically Catholic view, I just know so many Catholics who feel so much pressure to vote a certain way because of supposedly pro-life views when that's not what anything else about them aligns with. And so I like how she said, you know, I don't need permission to believe what I'm believing. I don't need permission to vote a certain way. Those kind of things were just really, really resonating with me.
I think the specific quote was like, you've got a Gandhi that shit, which was like,
yes, I wrote that down and I was like, I want to tattoo that. That's awesome.
It was like, if you don't see a space for your belief, make it, which I actually think like, from a belief standpoint, period, right? Whether it's political or religious, one of the things I love about that, especially as a Catholic, there's always been this preconceived notion, especially growing up in the South, that there's one way to be Catholic because that's what orthodoxy is, right? And there are certainly limitations, right? Like there are certainly ways that we conform ourselves into what the church believes because we know that there's a wisdom there. But no matter what you believe, there should be this understanding that there has to be this personal way that you're expressing that, especially if your belief you think is a relationship with someone, right? And so I think there's a huge reality that what she was expressing about politics really does apply to the way people feel about church. And I was actually thinking, like, I remember reading, like, I think you were talking about, like, at one point, like, you kept on thinking somebody needs to start a Catholic feminist podcast, right? Like, and in your mind, it was like somebody else should do that. And then one day, right? Like, you were just like, wait, I could do this. Like, I can make this space for this way I want to express what I believe and how I feel. And I think I talk to so many people in all stripes of belief, whether they are atheists or, you know, agnostic, Wiccans, whatever, that were, well, actually Wiccans are pretty good about this, which is like, I mean, you know, a thing, but not knowing how to say, this is who I am in this place of faith, and whether I'm right, I want to be honest about it, or whether I'm wrong, I still want to be honest about it so that I can find this place and so that I can actually operate from who I really am, so that I can actually start growing. And I think that's so hard lots of times when we get limited down. And I think the church really very clearly in its teachings kind of supports that understanding of like, we can tell you what's right or wrong, but we can't make you believe anything that you don't want to believe. And I think people forget that a lot of the time, and it's really hard on me. So I loved what she was hearing that. What else stood out to you?
I loved her stories about how she reacted so imperfectly when people told her about their pregnancies. Because I think we put so much pressure on ourselves to have the perfect reaction or to know exactly what we would say in that situation. And I didn't know Destiny personally when you started this interview. Like, I knew what New Wave Feminist was about, but I didn't necessarily know what she was about. And so when she was telling the first story and she responded, "Oh, so you killed your child?" I was like, "Oh my gosh, who are you interviewing?" I like flipped out mentally. I'm like, is this interview going to go away? That makes me super uncomfortable. And I'm going to have to like come on here and be like, "Tony, what are you doing?" But when she talks about how she realized that was so the wrong way to react, and I can't remember her mom's exact phrasing, but it was like that her next abortion will be in your honor. I was like, oh dang. I think it's so good to share those kind of missteps because we all are on this journey, right? I mean, that's so cliche to say, but it's true, of seeking truth and seeking how to relate that truth to other people. And we're all going to take missteps. And it's really comforting to me to just know that someone who I see after the interview, I was like, this girl has a head on her shoulders. She knows what's up, but she didn't just pop out of the womb that way. Right. Like she had these missteps and these mislearnings. And I think that was really powerful. And then I loved so many things, but when she was talking about intersectional feminism, that's something that's really important to me and that's been weighing on me a lot because I live in a suburb of Milwaukee that's like, I mean, it's like Wonder Bread land. Like everyone here is white. Everyone here is upper middle class. We're like probably the poor people in Brookfield because we rent. I mean, that sounds stupid, but like it's honestly kind of true. And I interact all day with people who are pretty much exactly like me. Mm. And our problems are the same. And like, it's just so like, it's so easy to fall into that hole then of me seeing like, this is feminism. Like it's for people just like me, but feminism has to be for women who aren't like you too. And so that's something I'm really conscious about on my podcast is like, I don't just want to give pep talks to like white upper middle class Catholics. I want to engage with all these different kinds of women and hear about their stories and what's affecting them because we're not all affected in the same way. And so I just really appreciate that she brought that up too.
Can you tell me one of your favorite stories or experiences or conversations you've been able to have with somebody who comes from a different background than you?
On my podcast or just like in life?
Either way, yeah, sure.
Either way, on my podcast, the one that jumps to mind most obviously is that we had Gloria Purvis on to talk about race and white privilege. And when people hear white privilege, a lot of people are like, "Oh, I hate that phrase." Like they have all these connotations of what they think it means. But she broke it down so beautifully in explaining like what that really was. And to be able to have a one-on-one conversation with her about even like our different experiences. I told a story when I was talking to Gloria about at our Trader Joe's, they check your receipt on the way out. And I accidentally threw mine away. And what went through my head was, I don't look like I would steal from Trader Joe's. They're not going to care if I don't have mine. And I said to the guy on the way out, like, "Oh, I threw it away." And he was like, "No problem. Don't worry about it." And then I walked up to my car and I realized, why do I think I don't look like someone that would steal from Trader Joe's? Like, what do I think someone who steals from Trader Joe's looks like? Right. Like, I obviously have this picture in my head. And it was this moment of, oh my gosh, we all have these really ingrained biases in us, even if we think we don't. Mm-hmm. And so that was like a great conversation that I was able to have with her, just hearing about how she just can feel really left out from Catholic things, right? Because so much of it is run by white people who just don't understand those situations, who don't understand those circumstances. And it was really powerful. And so, yeah, I mean, that's just something I try to do in my podcast is be conscious of who I'm having on and different backgrounds and things like that, because there's like 8 million billion upper middle class white woman. And it doesn't mean that we're not all important or that we all have important stories to tell. We absolutely do. But we have to make sure we're making room for all kinds of stories.
No, I love that. Has there ever been a time that you feel like you've been dismissed because you're a woman?
Yes. yeah. I'm trying to like think through. I mean, there's been multiple. The one that I tell a lot because it's so blatant is that back when I was a missionary, I had a group of men literally say to me like that they didn't think that women should be team directors, which is outrageous for many reasons, right? But they just started like throwing Bible verses in my face, and it was so weird. And I remember standing there thinking, like, I didn't realize people actually thought that. Like, I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, which is hippie land. They call it like the liberals of the lakes from Madison. Like, I hadn't really encountered that much until I left Madison, and I encountered it in all these different ways. But yeah, I mean, it's sometimes really intentional like that, like literally saying a woman can't be in charge. And then sometimes it's unintentional. Like when you look at your church's pastoral council and you realize that it's all mm-hmm. men, you know, I'm sure that wasn't intentional. Like, I don't think that they rejected every female applicant, but they didn't necessarily think through, like, could a woman bring something unique to the yeah. table? You know what I mean? It says to me, like, were women being like valued in the same way? I mean, I don't know the background. Maybe no women applied, but it's just little things like that.
It really weighs on me. Like, lots of times when I'll like ask a question, I'm like, hey, what are some strong, especially like female voices who are people of color, right? Like, this is a question I'll ask on the internet on a regular basis for projects we're working on. And it's really hard for me. Kind of the opposite end of that spectrum when somebody's like, yeah, do you want somebody to talk about like multicultural ministry or like what it's like to be a woman in ministry? And I'm just thinking, no. Like, I mean, like sometimes, yeah, but that's usually not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for someone who happens to be excellent at sharing a vision or a message, who happens to be a female person of color. And I don't need their message to be about that. I need it to be influenced by the strength of that. And I think for me, it's really about pushing back against, like, I don't care about tokenism, right? Like, we've got an online mm-hmm. event that will have already happened by the time this came up called ThriveCon, which is a youth ministry training event. And I'm so excited that our speaker lineup is more women than men. And we were intentional about that, but we didn't go after them because they were women. We said, who are the best people we know to talk about this, who we aren't hearing from on a regular basis? And a lot of those voices just happen to be female voices because they don't get listened to.
I love that so much because, I mean, I don't like tokenism either. I don't want to be asked to do something just because I'm a woman. That's stupid. Like, I can simultaneously say my womanhood gives me special gifts and then say, like, but I don't want to be your token woman. And I don't want you inviting women to something just so you can check a box and seem like you're so into social justice. I mean, right. That's ridiculous.
And that, for me, a lot of times within church stuff, when women are intentionally included, it becomes about, well, we have to have a woman to do the women's talk, or we have to have, like, you know, a person of color to do this talk on multicultural ministry, which I think are absolutely the right answers. So I would love to hear a woman give a talk on men's spirituality, because I think women are going to bring something unique to that conversation that other men aren't, even if they don't know some of the things from experience that men know about being a man. And that's, I think being really intentional about those things are a lot of what I see most intersectional feminists really trying to move the conversation to. And that's what I love. And I also, I talk about this in the next interview we're going to do. Like, I had to Google intersectional feminism. I was just like, yes, like, I know what that is. And then was like intersectional feminist.
I'm glad that you Googled it, but I'm also kind of afraid, like, who knows what the internet says about intersectional feminism. I feel like you could find a lot of weird stuff by Googling that.
Urban Dictionary is one of the top five results, and it had some very interesting things to say about intersectional feminism that were not polite or kind. I also really like the conversation around prayer at the end of each of these is always really interesting to me, because I so far no one said no. And I always say this, like, I need someone to say no eventually, because then it gives people freedom to say, like, I'm worried that people just say yes because they're like, oh, the episode I listened to before this, they said yes, and I should you know, like whatever.
Right.
And whether that's the reason or not, I never guessed. But it was really interesting to me to hear, like, I have witches casting spells against me, you know, and that certainly influenced the way I prayed. And I wanted to talk about that for a second, because for me, it's so interesting the way that faith plays into some of that. And I, this is me like venting my own stuff to you and to everyone listening. I prayed against the demonic and like any spiritual forces that may have attached themselves to her because of that. But I also want to say, like, it's not just about that. Like, there are probably Christians out there, and I'm air quoting right now, which is a great thing to do on you know, podcast, because everybody can see it, who are probably like damning Destiny because they disagree with her politically. And both of those things are of grave concern to me. And both of those things are things I was praying against. And not because I do believe that there are some implicit dangers in you know, Wiccanism and witchcraft and all those other things. But I also, for me, that was more about like, there's a lot of negative spiritual energy being directed at Destiny right now. And it's really weird to me to think about like other women attacking other women that way. Like, there's this mental picture of like, you know, men oppressing women when it comes to feminism. But it's always so insane to me to see some of the negative intersections that come within feminist culture itself. Do you ever experience any of that? I think is my question I want to kick off to you from that.
I have never had a man angrily email me about the podcast. I have only ever had women. And I'm not trying to make it sound like I get all this hate and all these trolls and, oh, I'm so famous, it's so hard. That's not true. But the angry emails I get are always from women. And it's really funny to see the varying tones that people take. Because a lot of people are like really respectful and just have some beef with like one episode and that's fine. But then you get the people who of course are like, you're trying to drag people down to hell and I will pray for you. And I always want to respond like, thank you for praying for me. I'm never going to be like, don't pray for me. I am so confident in my relationship with Jesus. I really am. Like, I talk to him constantly. I feel his presence. I feel very connected to him. And so when people say things like I'm dragging people to hell, I'm so confident it's not true that it honestly does not bother me. I'm not just saying that to be polite. It truly doesn't bug me that much. I'm really good at hitting delete. I'm really good at blocking. I am not the girl who like cries because someone sent her an angry email. And I'm sure people do think that. And there's a lot of people who see the name Catholic feminist and instantly don't want anything to do with it and think they know exactly what I think. And it's funny how people can think they know exactly who you voted for and exactly what you think on every issue when sometimes it's so far from the truth. But I just, it honestly doesn't bother me because I feel like I have such a strong relationship with Jesus that nothing can break it and nothing can separate me from him. And so I wish that people didn't feel such anger because it makes me feel like I hope that you're not far from him. But when you are sending me those kind of emails, I feel like you're far from him. And that makes me so sad for you. So I guess that's really like my emotional response. I definitely get hate from other women, but it just really doesn't bug me that much.
No, totally.
Does that make sense?
I don't. So far, I don't get hate from anybody, which I am so surprised by, like, given the tone of my show and the state of Catholicity in the U.S., the fact that I don't.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that too. No offense. I mean, I love your show, but I could see how people would give you hate for it.
I mean, I'm no Claire Swinarski, you know, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, so with that said, if you had a question that you could ask Destiny, or if you had a comment you just wanted to say to her, what would that be?
I think maybe I would ask her what, and I mean this genuinely, I don't mean it as like a passive aggressive, you're not doing anything. I genuinely want to know like what they're doing about why women have abortions and like what their concrete action steps are. I'd love to hear more about that. I always like to hear what people are actually doing like off the internet. Cause I think there's only so much you can do online. You know what I mean? So like, I'm just really interested in why women have abortions. And I would love to hear, because when I've looked into it, like the Guttmacher Institute has always come out with that kind of stuff. And it usually has to do with like, for instance, I think the number one most recent thing that came out was saying that a lot of women, because they don't want to be single moms because they're not with the father of their baby. It's like, what is New Age feminist doing to combat those things so that we can kind of cut abortion off at the roots? And I don't want to come across as passive aggressive. Like, I'm sure they are doing things. I just genuinely don't know and would love to hear about it. That's probably what I had asked her.
Awesome. Well, I got to ask her most of my questions. There's a couple of things that I would have loved to ask her a little bit more about how she kind of steps out of her own echo chamber and a couple other things. But it was such a great conversation. Also, if you guys are interested, there's a little bit more from Destiny. If you're a Patreon supporter for us, I've got a short clip with her about why she is pro-life from just a scientific and secular perspective that's on our Patreon as bonus content. But Claire, if people want to find you on the internet before our next episode comes out in this two-part series, what's the best place to find you?
Yeah, you can go to thecatholicfeministpodcast.com. Everything is over there. Our social media links, our show, everything is kind of housed there. So just our main website, thecatholicfeministpodcast.com.
Awesome. And then if you guys want to check out more about The Threshold, you can go to thresholdpodcast.fm. We've also got a Facebook page and a Facebook discussion group set up for each of our episodes. If you want to go on there and talk about this episode or any other, please join us there. Also, as the time of recording this, I just got back on the dark web, by which I mean Twitter, because apparently that's where podcasts live, and you can check us out
there. I just left Twitter. That's hilarious that you just turned on.
I've learned that if I want to get certain guests, apparently they live on Twitter, and so like at Thresh Pod is where you can go and check that out. But all that information is also linked through thresholdpodcast.fm. So until next time, get out there, FNF ability, and talk about what really matters.